Francis Scott Key Bridge is hit by a container ship in Maryland? What military assets are taking part in search and rescue efforts? Produced by Defense News and Military Times, this is the Early Bird Brief. Each morning, we bring you the defense and national security news of the day.
We are still investigating what happened, but we are quickly gathering details. The preliminary investigation points to an accident. We haven't seen any credible evidence of a terrorist attack.
Also, the Navy released its budgetary wish list for the next fiscal year. What does this all mean for our defense and security? You'll find out. I'm your host, Simone Perez. Today is Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. First up, the Coast Guard is coordinating with multiple partner agencies to respond to the Tuesday morning collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland. The Coast Guard said watchstanders received a report that the Singapore flag vessel had struck the bridge at 1:27 a.m. A cargo ship struck a support beam, which caused the bridge to break and fall into the water. The Coast Guard said there were reports of individuals in the water. The Associated Press reported that six missing construction workers that were on the bridge at the time of the collapse are presumed dead. Maryland Governor Wes Moore said a host of government agencies were working to investigate the events.
We started coordinating immediately after the Key Bridge collapsed. We've been standing together every step of the way, from our county leadership, to our city leadership, to our state leadership, to our federal leadership.
Response crews from the Coast Guard stations Curtis Bay and Annapolis deployed to the scene for active search and rescue. A Coast Guard Air Station Atlantic City MH-65 Dolphin helicopter crew, along with the Coast Guard investigators and pollution responders, were also directed to the site of the incident. Another important story, the Navy released its wish list for the upcoming fiscal year. For more on this, Naval Warfare reporter Megan Eckstein joins the episode. So, Megan, what were some of the big items in the Navy's list for this year?
Yeah, the Navy's 2025 unfunded priorities list was actually shaped a little bit by a weird situation we find ourselves in. So let's take a step back and note that the Navy and the other military services really start crafting their budget about a year and a half out. When they start making these, they kind of assume they're going to get all the previous budgets through Congress, and they kind of assume that they have an idea of how much they'll be operating and where around the world. So the 2025 budget has been weird in that the Navy started having to send a lot of ships to the Red Sea last October. They did not see that coming. They did not anticipate all these ships operating in the Middle East. They also didn't expect to have so much uncertainty on the 2024 budget. So that led to two really interesting things in this 2025 wish list. One of them is $403 million for the submarine industrial base. The Navy did request money in their regular 2025 budget for this, but they are not anticipating they'll get all the 2024 money they were expecting. So they're saying that they need this additional $403 million to sort of help the 25 budget make sense. That way there aren't any gaps. The other is that they are requesting money for Standard Missile 2 refurbishment, essentially. Some of these missiles are rather old, and they're actually not able to be shot from a ship right now. They need to go through a recertification process. And so the Navy is asking for $93 million to help put more Standard Missile 2s through that process. That way ships in the Red Sea could fire them. We also see some more traditional things in here. We have $75 million for a seabed warfare payload for a remotely operated vehicle. That's kind of cool. That's something the Navy wants to accelerate. They want to accelerate development of some payloads for the extra large unmanned underwater vehicle. So that's typically what we would see here, which is, you know, the Navy has their regular budget, but they have some high interest topics that they might want to throw more money at and accelerate if Congress was willing to do that.
And in your reporting, you've talked about the Fiscal Responsibility Act and how it affects defense funding. How does that affect what the Navy can get from this list?
Yeah, so the wish list is really telling Congress, hey, if we had some extra money, here's what we like to do. The problem is that this year they do not have any extra money. The Fiscal Responsibility Act caps the defense budget, which means that if lawmakers are moved by anything they see on this list and they decide, yeah, we want to give that to the Navy, they need to find an equal cut to make elsewhere in the defense budget. So there's no raising the top line. There's no extra free money to be had. It's really going to have to be a one-for-one trade. And so we'll just have to watch and see what Congress does with that this year.
Also on your radar for today, the Marine Corps recently completed a large-scale inspection of its barracks. Marine Corps reporter Irene Lowenson breaks down the inspection for us. Hey Irene, first, could you explain how these inspections were conducted?
Well, there has been pressure on the Marine Corps to improve the sorry state of its barracks. There have been media reports in Military Times and other publications of some of the dire conditions in some of the barracks, from mold to a dead rodent to just general dilapidation and disarray. And then there was a GAO, a Government Accountability Office report in September that looked at all of the services barracks that found really bad conditions in many barracks across the services. So the Marine Corps is rolling out an initiative called Barracks 2030, which is about making sure that the barracks are more livable places for Marines to live. Partly it's a way to keep more Marines in the service, to retain Marines into their second terms and beyond. So as part of that, in February, the Marine Corps announced a service-wide barracks inspection. They called it wall to wall. Every single barracks room, every single squad bay was going to get inspected by a leader from outside of the chain of command, and that was going to give the service a baseline understanding of where the barracks were as the Marine Corps prepared to invest more money in renovating and restoring these barracks.
So Irene, there are two sides to every story, right? The official service comment and also what rank and file Marines say about the inspections. What have you heard from the service, but also those rank-and-file Marines, about how these inspections were conducted and what they found?
Well, the inspection involved 60,000 barracks rooms, and it just wrapped up on March 15th. What the Marine Corps said so far is we're still analyzing the data. You know, we have to brief senior leaders. We have to figure out what the trends even are first. And then at that point, we can release more information to the media and to the public. A Marine spokesman did say that the initial findings of the inspections were consistent with the Government Accountability Office report, which found pretty bad conditions in the military's barracks. We'll see down the line what the official results of the inspections were. I spoke with three Marines, one in Virginia, one in North Carolina, and one in Okinawa, Japan, about how the inspections went for them. Two of them said that their leaders didn't make them do additional cleaning, didn't make them do painting or anything, and just kind of let the inspections happen with the barracks in their natural state. One Marine said that leadership did say, you guys have to do additional cleaning of your rooms before the inspections took place. The Marine in North Carolina said that after the inspection took place, Marines were seeing faster responses to their maintenance requests, but that there are still some bigger fundamental issues in the barracks, including with ventilation systems, and those where there's not really a quick fix persist. And one component of these inspections was the inspectors had to mark down, are there broken appliances? Are there health or safety concerns that require immediate attention? And if so, how are we gonna take action on that? So that was baked into the inspection, finding issues, writing them down, and then calling for additional resources to fix those issues. But some issues, I think, are, you know, can't be fixed in a few weeks and can't be fixed without lots of money. So doing these barracks inspections is step one. There are lots of other actions the Marine Corps is taking as part of Barracks 2030. A big step for the Marine Corps is going to be getting the funding for pretty expensive barracks restorations across the service.
And now here's some other stories we're hearing chirps about. A British court ruled yesterday that Julian Assange can't be extradited to the United States on espionage charges unless U.S. authorities guarantee he won't receive the death penalty. That gave the WikiLeaks founder a partial victory in his long legal battle over the site's publication of classified American documents. The government of Chad said that an explosive device detonated and killed 7 soldiers during a patrol. The commission probing Maine's deadliest mass shooting concluded law enforcement had ample grounds to pursue assault charges against Robert Card for punching a fellow Army reservist in the face 6 weeks before he killed 18 people. And Pakistan's military said yesterday that the country's security forces killed 4 insurgents in an overnight raid on a militant hideout near the border with Afghanistan. And on this day in history, in 2020, North Macedonia became NATO's newest member. That's it for us this morning. To get more top stories and breaking news, go to defensenews.com/EBB to subscribe to the Early Bird Brief newsletter. Please give us a like, rating, and a comment wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at defense_news and at Military Times. The Early Bird Brief is hosted and produced by me, Simone Z. Perez. Today's episode featured stories by Jonathan Lehrfeld, Megan Eckstein, and Irene Lowenson. Have a great day.